Hello, listeners. Thank you for joining. This is Madison Rice, and joining me today is Henry Hawkins, Will Vineyard, Maddie Coleman, and Jacob Cooper. Today's podcast will be covering gender and power, specifically within the terms of Confucian ideology during the Heian period in Japan. To begin, Henry will talk about how the introduction of Confucian ideology into Japan in the 5th century, the use of Confucian political philosophy during the 6th and 7th centuries, and the presence of Confucian influence in classical Japanese texts suggests the existence of strong Confucian influences in Japan that molded cultural and societal norms during the Heian and Kamakura periods. After this, Henry and Jacob will discuss the different ways that two stories written during the Heian and Kamakura periods reflect Confucian philosophy regarding respect for elders and filial piety. Maddie and Jacob will follow by examining other stories written during these periods that illustrate the Confucian-influenced attitude toward lust. In the final section, Will argues that the subdued role of women in the Heian, Kamakura, and Muromachi Japan demonstrates the effect of Confucian ideology on gender roles during these periods. Thus, we argued that although Confucianism was not formally institutionalized until the Edo period, stories written during the Heian period suggest that Confucian ideology mold perceptions of family, social interactions, and various other social values. Let us go ahead and turn to Henry Hawkins, who will give us a brief history on the presence of Confucian ideology before the Heian period.
Dates surrounding the introduction of Confucianism into Japan from China center around the beginning of Japan's written history in the 5th century. With the introduction of the Chinese writing system, written historical narratives concerning Japan's political history came into existence. Along with a list of 1,000 Chinese characters that made these written historical narratives possible, Japan also received a copy of the Confucian Analects written in Chinese script. Because an essential Confucian text accompanied the Chinese writing system, early scholars in Japan must have studied and been impacted by Confucian philosophy. Additionally, Prince Shotoku used Confucian ideas to justify the centralization of power into the hands of the emperor. During the political career of Prince Shotoku, 574 to 622 AD, political authority became highly centralized. In order to validate this new monopoly on power, Prince Shotoku, a famous regent who served under Emperor Suko, employed Confucian political ideology that asserts the foundational importance of loyalty to figures of authority. Moreover, during the Nara period, 710 to 794 AD, a university in the capital city of Nara offered an education in Chinese Confucianism that worked to reinforce the power of the centralized state, the emperor. Educational program espoused another fundamental tenet of Confucian philosophy, the moral obligation of rulers to be just to their subjects and the obligation of subjects to be loyal to their rulers. The presence of Confucian thought within the Japanese university system before the Heian period again illustrates how closely wed intellectual pursuits were with Confucian teachings. Finally, famous texts from the Nara period, like the first official histories collected in the Nihon Shoki, reveal an apparent assimilation of a Confucian worldview and ethics. Clearly, the presence of Confucian ideology in classical Japanese works shows the importance of Confucian philosophy much earlier than the Edo period. Thus, the existence of Confucian thinking in Japan immediately before the Heian period reveals an intellectual history of Confucian ideology that may have affected ethical thinking during the Heian and Kamakura periods.
Thank you, Henry. Now we are going to hear from you again, as well as Jacob, on the topic of themes of filial piety and stories from the book Japanese Tales, and how they resemble Confucian teachings on filial obligations. Jacob?
That's right, Madison. The story I will be analyzing, The Old Woman on the Mountain, depicts a Confucian-influenced conception of filial piety and elder respect. The story, The Old Woman on the Mountain, taken from the Konjaku Monogatarishu, a collection of stories written during the late Heian period, appears to feature the theme of respect for elders, an important aspect of Confucian philosophy. In the story, an old woman lives with a younger couple. The wife from the younger couple detests the old woman and pressures the husband into taking the old woman far into the mountains and leaving her alone. The husband, under pressure from his wife, agrees to this and leaves the old woman in a remote part of the mountain near the couple's home. Unable to endure the guilt and sure he had made a mistake, the husband retrieves the old woman from her spot on the mountain and continues to care for her.
Thank you, Jacob. So in your opinion, what elements of the story reflect a Confucian understanding of filial piety?
Interesting question, Madison. Regarding the topic of respect for elders, the husband's regret and guilt for abandoning the old woman shows how the story emphasizes an ethical obligation towards elders. At home again, he could not forget what his wife had made him do, and considering how kindly the old woman had once looked after them, he wished he had not done it. The husband's inability to forget the old woman on the mountaintop in this passage suggests an ingrained moral maxim that depends and demands respect for elders. Similarly, the Confucian Analects, a compilation of ethical rules that constitute constitutes the Confucian moral code calls for the respect of elders. To respect parents and elders is the root of humanity. Elder respect as the root of humanity illustrates the fundamental importance that respect for elders plays in a Confucian moral system. Because of the fundamental role played by respect for elders in Confucian ideology, the husband's guilt seems to arise out of a natural intuition that he has disobeyed this foundational rule. Therefore, the existence of a moral consciousness regarding elders in the story, The Old Woman on the Mountain, demonstrates Confucian values in literature from the Heian historical period in Japan.
Now I'll reintroduce Henry, who is here to share his interpretations on filial piety in the Heian period.
While Jacob and I are speaking about different stories, I use many of the same passages from the Analects that Jacob used in his analysis. The topics of elder respect and filial piety are very closely wed ideas in Confucian thought. Many of the passages that mention respect for one's parents often include imperatives to respect elders as well. Another story, Be Good to Your Mother and Father, from the collection Kasugo Gonjin Genki, written during the Kamakura period, depicts the Confucian values of filial piety. In the story, a dancer named Koma no Yukimitsu falls ill, dies, and wakes up in hell. The god of Kasuga, disguised as a gentleman, then speaks to Emma, the king of hell. Afterwards, Kasuga takes Yukimitsu on a tour of hell and returns Yukimitsu to his home. Yukimitsu asks Kasuga how to avoid being sent back to hell. In response, Kasuga says, Be good to your mother and father. That's the highest virtue. If you cultivate it, you won't fall into hell. This passage gives clear moral guidance on the topic of filial piety, as well as consequences for not following this guidance. Moreover, because the moral edict comes from a god, an ultimate source of authority, following the rule becomes a moral imperative. In the same way, the Confucian Analects places an equally great weight on being good to one's mother and father. In the previously mentioned passage from the Analects, respecting parents along with elders is the root of humanity. Thus, the god, as a source of authority responsible for the command to be good to one's mother and father, imbues the moral law with a similar weight to the almost identical law posited by Confucian philosophy. Furthermore, the Analects, in addition to providing another similar command to that of the god in the story, gives a set of duties that constitutes being good to one's mother and father. In the Analects, a philosophical fragment states, Lord Meng Yi asked about filial piety. The master said, never disobey. What does that mean? Said Lord Meng Yi. The master replied, when your parents are alive, serve them according to the ritual. When they die, bury them according to the ritual. In the passage, filial piety means the same thing as be good to your mother and father. While the story does not provide a definition for being good to one's mother and father like the passage from the Analects, the story clearly asserts the importance of filial piety in a similar way to the passage from the Analects. Therefore, the strong emphasis on the theme of filial piety in a story from Kamakura period Japan shows the influence of Confucian ideology on Japanese moral thought during the Kamakura period.
Thank you, Jacob and Henry. Maddie Coleman is joining us now, speaking on the topic of lust and its role in Japanese society during this time. Maddie?
Thank you. It is interesting how Confucian ideology made an impact on the morals of East Asia. With listening and repeating these tales, it shows how important certain actions we take for granted, like how one treats their parents, will affect your future. Starting to direct our conversation towards the topic of lust, Confucian ideology states that gentlemen should be aware and refrain from lust. Confucius conveyed a message in the Analects that warned the people of East Asia of lust. We will discuss two accounts from Japanese tales called The Little Bottle of Tears and Illumination. These narratives show how Confucian ideology punishes lustfulness. These narratives show how Confucian ideology punishes lustfulness. Initially, we'll begin with The Little Bottle of Tears. The tale of The Little Bottle of Tears tells of a man named Haichu, a womanizer who used a bottle of tears and a packet of dried flower buds to seduce women. Haichu would act as if he was rejected by a woman while courting another woman. Haichu would put the tears from the bottle on his face to act upset from the rejection of another woman. Then he would put the flower buds in his mouth to have fresh breath in order to entice another woman to sleep with him. One day, at Haichu's house, his wife caught him placing his tears and flower buds on the beam of the house. She replaced the tears with ink and the buds with mouse feces. When Haichu grabbed his items to pursue another woman, he realized his packet had been messed with. He assumed a goblin changed the bottle of tears and flower buds. Haichu was so ashamed he stopped using his packet. Now we'll move on to the next tale, Elimination. The tale Elimination is about a man called Haichu, who started to lust over a household member of a priest. The woman's name was Jitju. She did not reply to Haichu's messages or letters unless she was scheming against him. Haichu was relentless. He found her witty and brilliant, so much so, he tried to ambush her maid to obtain her chamber pot. Haichu stole Jitju's pot, which contained feces and urine. He thought Jitju used food to simulate the look of feces and urine, and he consumed the items in the pot. At the end of the tale, Haichu died. As we can see, the moral of these tales are that lust bring upon punishment. Fusion ideology proves lustfulness and punishment will occur if the acts appear. In the tale, The Little Bottle of Tears, Haichu believed the sabotage of his latest endeavor was punishment for not following the statutes pertaining to lust and confucianism. In Elimination, Haichu's punishment for being lustful was death. This tale might frighten younger generations to follow the teachings related to lust and confucianism.
Thank you, Maddie. Jacob Cooper is back with us to continue this conversation on lust and its role in Confucian society. Jacob?
Thanks again, Madison. As we now know, Confucian ideology is very clear on the topic of lust. To paraphrase a segment from the Analects, the master said, "When young, a gentleman must guard against lust." This warning informs many of the social interactions between men and women in Japanese society even today, but especially during the Heian period. This is fairly evident when analyzing tales collected at this time, as many of them demonstrate the fearsome consequences for those who lust or disobey their true love. One example of such consequences occurs in the story The Forsaken Lady. In this tale, a powerful lord, Fujiwara no Morori, is in love with a sweet and meek lady. Due to the demands of his office, Fujiwara begins spending less time with the lady, and she begins to believe that the lord no longer cares for her. They drift apart and do not see one another for 6 months. After this long separation, Fujiwara is invited to the lady's house by a servant. Upon his entry, the lord immediately recalled his love for her and swore to himself that he would never neglect her again. Meanwhile, the lady begins to angrily chant the Lotus Sutra, and after reciting the entire passage, she weeps, as does Fujiwara because of the cruel way he had treated her. Then, in her anger, the lady died. Fujiwara flees from the house, contemplating his wrongdoing, but he quickly sickens and dies, some say at the hands of the lady's ghost. In another story, Mesmerized, those who cannot follow the teachings of the master are again punished. This tale focuses on a young woman who, when walking one day, feels the need to relieve herself next to a wall in an alley. Upon doing so, the woman is promptly frozen in place by some mysterious force. After investigation, a young man notices a snake staring straight at the rigid woman, and he realizes that the snake, a symbol for lust in Japanese culture, is causing the problem. After the snake is killed, the woman slowly begins to return to normal.
What an intriguing tale, Jacob. What is your opinion on the consequences displayed in these stories?
The Confucian message contained within these tales are clear. In the first story, Fujiwara's neglect of love and lust for power, coupled with a lady's resentment and forsaking of love, caused both to die sad deaths. Calling upon teachings of respect and self-control, the tale clearly indicates that Lord Fujiwara was wrong for abandoning his true love in greedy pursuits. If in one's conduct one refrains from greed, one can be considered authoritative. In the second story, the woman was overcome by lust, represented as the snake, and had to be rescued from her otherwise terrible fate of being forever frozen by the destruction of said lust. Such an obvious violation of Confucian principles clearly results in outside forces righting the societal wrongs. Overall, the Confucian teachings play a pivotal role in understanding how and why the interactions taking place in these tales result in the punishments and consequences that they do. In every example, a violation of the master's teaching, whether it be greed, lust, or even a breach of traditional filial relationships, results inevitably in something supernatural or out of the ordinary, inflicting punishment upon the perpetrators. Seemingly all social interactions relied heavily upon an understanding of Confucian ideology, and any violation of these teachings was considered unnatural. By passing along these stories, the Japanese were ensuring that their cultural successors would understand the importance of obeying Confucian philosophy. It becomes clear, then, that Confucian teachings heavily influenced the development of Japanese culture long before it was institutionalized as a religion in the Edo period.
That was some very interesting content, Jacob. Thank you for sharing. Now we will turn to Will, who is going to speak on the subdued role of women during this time.
Thank you for that great info on some intriguing tales, Jacob. And yes, Madison, the subdued role of women is a notable topic for our discussion. These Japanese tales that Jacob talked about represent the subdued role of Japanese women that is clearly evident in the Heian, Kamakura, and Muromachi periods. Confucian ideology influenced the exclusion of women from political discourse and relevant, influential positions of power, which severely limited their presence in the historical record. Leonard Shillian, author of The Political Philosophy of Confucianism, exposes the limitations placed on women in the political arena. While not always consistent, Confucian ideas, established in the classics, expressed a general concern that women should remain submissive to men. The dominance of women was viewed as an abnormal social phenomenon, not meant to be taken seriously.
So Will, how are these values that were established in the Confucian classics influential in the lives of Japanese women during these three time periods?
Excellent question, Madison. Shillian's findings, which I had just discussed a few seconds ago, can be connected to these Japanese time periods by looking at the various leadership roles that some women were fortunate enough to attain. James R. Stiverson's The Cambridge History of Japan does an excellent job of illustrating the reality that these women lived. Stiverson describes women in positions of power not typically recognized by the historical record. For example, Mugai Neodia, a 13th century female Buddhist Zen master who lived from 1223 to 1298 AD, proved to be an exceptionally successful female religious figure. Stiverson acknowledges that Neodia's success contradicts the Confucian social structure. However, it is important to note that little information exists concerning the nature of Neodia's leadership and the institution she headed. While we know she must have held some level of significance within the Buddhist tradition, not much is known concerning her family ties and potentially important men in her life. Therefore, it is reasonable to conclude that her influence was limited and restricted, although noteworthy. Stiverson goes on to discuss the prevalence of female shamans, entertainers, and prostitutes in the Heian, Kamakura, and Muromachi periods, all of which, like Neodia, possessed a certain level of power within their profession or practice, but largely remained on the fringes of Japanese society, held back by the power of Confucian expectations.
This connection that you've made between Confucianism and the roles of Japanese women in the Heian, Kamakura, and Muromachi periods is very interesting. Well, could you maybe go into a little more detail concerning the roots of Confucian expectations in Japan?
Sure, absolutely. These Confucian expectations are explicitly discussed further in the Analects of Confucius. The Analects, which are a compilation of direct quotes and teachings from Confucius himself constructed by his disciples, prove that Confucius was extremely open concerning his views of women as complicated, inferior, and unworthy of power and influence. When informed that a certain king possesses 10 ministers, Confucius was quick to assert that the king in fact only possessed 9 ministers because one of them was a woman. This is a very direct denouncement of women in possessions of influence and power. Confucius essentially erased this person's potential for recognition and credit. No wonder women were forced to the outskirts of society to find paths leading to independence and status. Confucius also noted the frustrating and delicate complexity of women, which validated their exclusion from important discussions and tasks. He described them as, quote, difficult to handle. This made it challenging to argue for their presence in meaningful conversations and decisions. This strongly implies that women are not cooperative enough to handle the responsibility and demand of power. In Confucius's eyes and his followers' eyes, they were only capable of smaller, less impactful jobs, which again pushed them away from the central arena of authority.
Intriguing stuff, Will. Now, would it be possible for you to go into depth concerning the ways Confucian ideology has manifested itself in local Japanese culture and folklore over the centuries? I think that it might really solidify the point you're making about the role of women in these time periods.
For sure. There is a lot of great information surrounding the role of women in Japanese folklore, particularly in the fascinating and legendary yokai figures. Yokai, according to Michael Dylan Foster's The Book of Yokai, is a broad group of supernatural creatures that possess the quality of liminality, or in-betweenness. One in particular, the Yamamba, or mountain witch, crone or hag in English, is an excellent representation of Confucianism's contribution to Japanese folklore. The Yamamba is an elderly, decrepit-looking yokai that inhabits the forests of Japan and supposedly terrifies, kidnaps, and even sometimes eats local children. She is seen as a rebellious woman in exile that is sometimes characterized as demonic, while simultaneously being seen by some as a symbol of independence and empowerment. The vilified version of the Yamamba aligns well with the Confucian teachings that describe women in positions of authority as dangerous and a threat to the peaceful status quo. For this reason, an old woman alone in the woods that preys on children and families instead of taking care of her own like she is supposed to may have been seen by some as terrifying regardless of her frightening appearance. Foster mentions that the view of the Yamamba as an empowered woman is more of a modern stance, which may explain the dark, unfavorable origins of the creature.
All right, we are about out of time for today, so let's recap. The introduction of Confucianism to Japan during the 5th century, the importance of filial piety, the themes of lust and desire, and the subdued role of women in this period show the strong presence of Confucian ideology in Japan during the Heian, Kamakura, and Muromachi periods. Confucianism's political history began with the introduction of the Chinese writing system. With the advanced writing system came a copy of the Confucian Analects, which impacted many scholars in Japan. Eventually, Confucian ideas made their way to the the emperor who was able to centralize many Confucian practices. Immediately before the Heian period, you can see how the existence of Confucianism affected ethical thinking. In terms of filial piety, stories during the Kamakura and Heian periods emphasized an ethical obligation toward parents and elders that stemmed directly from the Analects, showing the strong influence of Confucian ideology placed on filial piety. As dishonoring your parents and elders would bring on punishment, Confucian ideology also pointed the same toward lust. Confucian ideology ultimately led to the subdued role of women, which was sustained by the limitations society put on them. Alright, well that's all we have for you today. I'm Madison, and thank you to our speakers, Henry, Will, Jacob, and Maddie. Also, a special thanks to our listeners for tuning in. Thank you.